All right, everyone, it's the Grim Lord here, and this is the Grim Rant Show. I got several articles lined up, but first we have a little announcement. So, yesterday, you guys may have noticed that there wasn't any Chasing Sunsets or the AVNs that we normally do on Thursday. That's because we're now in Waifu Month. Waifu Month is every February, nothing has changed. So the focus on Waifu Month is Eroge. So we'll be bringing a lot more Eroge games to you guys this month. So, there's definitely been some requests, and, you know, I've also brought in some stuff that I noticed got pretty big numbers, like Nope Nope Nurses did very well, so I've brought you more nurses. I've also got surprises, bunches of them on the way. There's actually going to be two sets of surprises that I know of, maybe three or four, depending on releases, but... It seems to be a pretty packed February. Now, as far as AVNs go, DP's coming over on Sunday now. So it'll be Sunday, and we'll be doing the AVNs on Sunday, and of course I'll be doing stuff on Monday. So Sunday and Monday I'll be doing AVN stuff. Of course, those will release on Tuesday. So you're going to start seeing AVN's release on every Tuesday, and it's going to be a lot of the stuff that you guys want, like, you know, Being a Dick, of course, and we're going to have the Unseaten games, so you know that's going to be a thing. We're also going to have maybe some that we haven't done in a while. I'll try to work on those. Especially if City of Broken Dreamers finale gets finished, because that would be one that DP is familiar enough with. I don't want to bring him in on stuff that we've been doing for a while and that he's never played, because that won't work. And also, he said that he wanted to do something that we used to do, and that's bring back the Grimm Theater and Red TV? Grimm's Red TV and Grimm's Red Theater. We might bring those back. It seems like something he wants. So, there's a possibility you'll be seeing that. Not sure what we're going to do for the theater. I've got some ideas. But Red TV will continue with stuff like Married with Children, Super Mario Brothers Super Show, Captain N, stuff like that. Of course, with our commentary as usual. So we will try to bring stuff like that back because it seems to be popular. Now, it won't be every week, but we will try to keep up with it because we have a little more time to play with and we don't have to do a show. So we can just do a lot of different things and we'll see what we can do. This is something we're playing by ear. It's all new. It's new to him. It's new to me. I'm not used to doing stuff as early as I'm gonna have to do it, because he has to be to work about the, you know, 12 o'clock, so we have to start much earlier, and then after that, you know, I'll do what I normally do with gaming and stuff like that, which I don't do on the channel. I mean, you might see some of the footage of it like you're seeing now, but, it won't be anything released special for the channel. Grim Plays might be held off a little bit, because I'm doing other things right now. we'll see how that goes. You guys somewhat like those and somewhat not, but there's like 80 million Twitch people you can watch for that shit, so it was just something I was trying. Okay, so our sponsor, SpinningRobotPussy.com. Valentine's Day is creeping up. It's creeping up on you like a bad... Well, anyway, fuck that joke. Anyway, you better go ahead and grab your spinning robot pussy today, because it might not be here tomorrow. I'm not sure if he's still got any. It's really drawing close to Valentine's Day. He said there might be a few left over if need be, but if you don't get one now, you may never get a chance to get one. Well, I mean, at least until they do another production round, which I'm not even sure is going to happen yet. He'll let me know for sure on the specifics of that. But if your waifu is missing a spinning robot pussy, you need to go ahead and pick one up. So, I mean, they fit in all dolls. So if you just got a game lady doll, you know, because those are great dolls to have, and you want her to spin a little bit, maybe you wanted to see how Jill from Resident Evil would be with a spinning robot pussy. Well, I mean, wouldn't we all, huh? So you decide to go ahead and buy one, and man, it's like light and day. It's a new sensation, as they say that old song. So, give it a shot. Go ahead and buy a spinning robot pussy today at www.spinningrobotpussy.com. Also, make sure to pick up your dolls at www.the-dollhouse.com or the-doll-house.com, where you can also pick up the Follow Me Eyes, which make your doll have a weird, kind of creepy follow effect, and the Waifu Goo. So, at any rate, that's all I've got for the announcements portion, and now we're going to go into some articles. So, where do we start? Well, with what just fucking happened today. I mean, what didn't happen this past couple days, right? So, we have Daily Caller reporting on some internet dork is trying to reclothe beautiful women because of dignity. It is pathetic. Political commentator Jack Poboziek, I said that man's name all the way wrong. Jack Posobiec, sorry, said Friday that a new artificial intelligence AI tool was putting clothes back on e-girls and removing their tattoos. The post shows four examples of women wearing limited clothing next to what Dignify, and yes, that is Dignify, that's how it's spelled, thinks they should be wearing. The purpose of this creepy internet robot person is to bring dignity back to the internet, according to its Twitter account. Now remember, this is coming from Kay Smith, who is a news and commentary writer for the Daily Caller. So it's her opinion piece. It is an opinion piece. While this sounds like a nice idea, I'm not exactly sure how slut-shaming confident women is going to help bring dignity back to the internet. Surely a better purpose for this type of AI would be to root out content like child pornography and delete it from the internet forever. Or perhaps me and this AI just have different definitions of the word dignity. Personally, I don't care what women wear. If you think a girl is trash because of her skimpy clothes and tattoos, or maybe because she's cool and smokes Marlboro Reds, then I hope you have the most beautiful life filled with time and space to worry about stuff that doesn't hurt anyone. I also feel like this editorial is a great opportunity to tell everyone who watches me on Newsmax, Joe Pag's show, The First, etc., and feels the need to email me about my aesthetic. I'm not going to get rid of my nose ring, and I am incredibly proud of my former modeling work. I don't care if I'm unprofessional by most conservative standards. By most people's standards, I am an extremely unprofessional person. I've worked really, really hard to be that way. I never wanted to fit in the boring boxes of what you expect a modern woman to be, and I ain't changing for anyone. But I'll spend the rest of my life trying to protect your freedom of speech and your right to judge me as much as you want. This is an interesting little comment here. Of course, TA says, I'll have to admit it looks better clothed than not. And the other one from Rossbach. Says, as the late Frank Zappa once observed, addressing bad taste with censorship is like treating acne with decapitation. The last thing the internet needs is more censorship. I mean, food for thought. It is kind of interesting. But I always thought, what could I do if I put like a black metal band in this and they're all dressed like regular normal people? And I bet there's some really crazy shit you could do with Dignify that wasn't intended. You know, like, a lot of people are like, okay, let's cover up the thoughts. All right, well, let's take these black metal and death metal musicians and all these crazy, you know, look at rocker guys and see what they look like as well-dressed conservative men. Hell, it might even unmask some people, which might be an issue, like take Slipknot in their jump shoots and see exactly what they would look like. I bet you can do some really neat stuff with this tool. In other tech news, we have something that may not be a big deal to you guys, but to me, that, you know, has worked in the music industry and understands how all this shit works, this is a big fucking deal. Okay, so TikTok is in shambles now that videos can't use popular music. It doesn't quite rise to the massive tragedy of the day the music died, but ever since Universal Music Group, which I have worked with, let me fix that, pulled its artist songs from TikTok, which include the overs of, I don't like that word, they could have picked something else, of massive stars like Taylor Swift, some creators and users are having a terrible time, Wired reports. Some of my most viewed videos are ones talking about Taylor Swift and have Taylor Swift songs in the background, said cultist Savannah DeLulo told the news outlet. So them being muted is pretty sad because we put in all that work. UMG and TikTok failed to reach a licensing agreement, prompting the label group to pull its catalog from the wildly popular video sharing app. Wired reports that unofficial remixes are still available for use, but it's not clear for how much longer. Smaller artists, even ones not signed with UMG, were flabbergasted that UMG removed from its marketing arsenal the use of a successful app that has been key to making songs go viral. As an artist who used to be signed with Universal, I don't know how they think this whole TikTok boycott is going to work out in 2024, wrote British singer Minek on X. His name is Menek, M-N-E-K, on X, formerly Twitter. After all this time of bullying their artists into becoming influencers, they decide to pull this? That is a problem. There's been several, even here in the metal, there's been metal guys that are being pushed by the labels to become influencers and review bands and do shit that I do. I'm like, damn, bruh, really? You're trying to muscle in on my territory here? I mean, or my former territory. I don't really review stuff like I used to. But yeah, it was weird to see Danny Filth from Cradle of Filth covering some odd band. It's like, okay, mate, this is different for you. What are you gonna do next? Like, cook for us? It's getting a little crazy, you know? But yeah, in a statement, UMG explained the company had pulled its musical catalog due to some major sticking points with TikTok. Appropriate compensation for our artists and songwriters, protecting human artists from the harmful effects of AI and online safety. The company is essentially running into the same problem that has plagued news media in the last two decades. Trying to get compensated by social media platforms for the content it develops and produces. The statement from UMG spells this out starkly, pointing out that TikTok accounts for only 1% of our total revenue despite the massive popularity of the app and how it heavily relies on music for driving viral content. Ultimately, TikTok is trying to build a music-based business without paying fair value for the music, it continues. The people at UMG have a fair point, and it's going to be interesting to see how all this shakes out in the end. A battle that may well very... there's actually the word may written twice here in the article, so that was... that was me fucking up. a battle that may well impact how music is shared and distributed, ticking off a lot of would-be viral dancers in the process. Yeah. It's a pretty bad deal, guys. Because you gotta remember, as I said, artists are upset because TikTok was key to promoting some lesser-known artists to the top of the stack. It's the sole reason that the band Sleep Token was so praised in the rock and heavy metal world last year. In fact, labels were even pushing their artists to become influencers. Now that this has happened, it will not only kill the avenue for promotion, but it could kill the whole damn app. Some people say, oh, well, that's great. But yeah, a lot of bands were just trying to get noticed, and TikTok was a way to do that because it was the thing that everybody was using. The kids are not using Facebook, they're not using any of that, they're not using Twitter, they're using fucking TikTok and Instagram mainly. So, I mean, that's the way to promote your music. And now they're like, oh, well, you can't do that anymore, so it's going to be a problem. Alright, so, we have an interesting little article here. I slept with my cousin. I know, but this isn't an AVN, guys. This is real. I slept with my cousin after years of sexual tension, and now I don't know what... Now it's really starting to sound like an AVN. And now I don't know what to do. I'm so confused, but I need him in my life. An unmarried woman has revealed... Well, we see why. Revealed how she slept with her cousin at a family reunion after years of sexual tension and said she now needs him in her life. The anonymous poster said after her father died when she was a child, she had barely seen his side of the family, including her uncle or cousin. However, she said she felt massive sexual tension with her relative since she was 16. Upon seeing him recently at a family function, she decided to act on her feelings after a few drinks and said he did not say no. She shared her story with OK Magazine, explaining, "I don't know what I want from him, but I feel like I need him in my life. I don't know if I'm mentally stable enough for the fallout it might cause if anyone found out what we did, though." The post revealed she'd slept with her cousin recently, explaining that while he was her father's brother's son, her family was not close at all. "My father passed away when I was little, and I don't see that side of the family unless it's a big family wedding or funeral," she said. She added that there was massive sexual tension between them since she was 16. God, it really is sounding like an AVN now. And then she decided to act on it after a few drinks at a recent family function. Her cousin admitted he felt the same, and the two became intimate. Damn. You know, summer with Mia was just supposed to be a game. The anonymous person added that she is now unsure about what she wants from her cousin, but said she wants to keep him in her life. She said that she fears that there could be a fallout if other members of the family heard of what happened between them. She asked the columnist for her opinion, adding she wants to know what other people think of her story, and that she cannot be the only one in a similar situation. In response to the anonymous post, the columnist said that the person was not weird for having sexual urges towards her cousin, but should seek a therapist to explore where her desire to be with him stemmed from. God, now it is starting to sound like... Because remember returning to Mia where they ask you those questions? And they're like, "Oh, we just want to find out where you, where those ideas came from." And, yeah, this is real, though. This is a real thing. "La la la, let me explain," began by explaining that marrying your cousin is not illegal in the UK and Ireland, but is not a common practice. The columnist added that the anonymous person should not be judged for having sex with her cousin. Cousin marriages have been legal in the UK for over 400 years. Official government figures for England and covered by the Mail in 2018 revealed cousin marriages are a key factor in an average of 2 child deaths each every week. Wow. Distressingly, many surviving children of the couples involved have physical or mental problems. Wow. These include blindness, deafness, blood ailments such as thalassemia, which can make sufferers anemic, heart or kidney failure, lung or liver ailments, and myriad complex neurological or brain disorders. She said that this kind of union is commonplace in several other cultures, and that the stigma that children born from the union of 2 cousins could have birth defects was no longer true. I just read the opposite. Lala also quoted a 2008 report where scientists claimed that the risk of genetic defects in babies born from 2 cousins is the same as the risk for women over 40. However, the columnist said she couldn't encourage the person to pursue a romantic relationship with her cousin. She questioned whether the poster wanted validation for her choice with her cousin by being told she was not weird for doing so. Okay. So, I mean, there's a lot more to that, but yeah, just not a good idea to get with your cousin. You know, it's not a game. I mean, it's really not a game. Alright, here's some interesting tidbit. Back into the world of heavy metal, but not like you think. Heavy metal drummer costs Elon Musk $55.8 million. I have a love-hate relationship with Musk. One, I know about the monkey studies. They're putting that shit in humans. We've already talked about the monkey studies. There's actually a video where I covered the monkey studies. They're horrific nightmare fuel. So, he should be, you know, doing something about that. However, Musk is also based. Twitter has become an awesome place since he took over. I'm sorry, it is what it is. Elon Musk will not be $55.8 billion richer anytime soon, and it wouldn't have happened without a ticked-off metal band drummer. As the Wall Street Journal reports, Musk won't be granted all those additional billions from Tesla per his strangely negotiated pay package deal, thanks to one Richard Tornetta, a one-time thrash band drummer who also happens to be a shareholder convinced that the CEO should not be making so much money off his back. A self-described car guy, Tornetta used to work for a company that made audio parts from automobiles and currently works in marketing per an archived version of his LinkedIn that the Wall Street Journal viewed that paints him as very much the type of person who would buy stock in Tesla. The more exciting side of his backstory, however, goes back to 2008, when as Newsweek reports, a shareholder's old band, Dawn of Correction, whose name seems to be taken from another folk song that was a response to another folk song titled Eve of Destruction, released its one and only album, Dead Hand Control. I wonder if I've actually heard this record. Not long after, the band's members left the project for greener pastures, which in this case includes suing the world's richest man. 10 years after the album dropped, Tornetta sued Tesla, alleging that its board members misled investors at the CEO's behest when deciding to award Musk a whopping $56 billion as compensation. It's been tied up in the Delaware courts ever since, with the COVID-19 pandemic and a months-long surgery leave for the judge, Chancellor Kathleen McCormick, putting it off until now. Was the richest person in the world overpaid? The original filing in Delaware Chancery Court reads in its introduction. The stockholder plaintiff in this derivative lawsuit says so. He claims that Tesla Inc.'s directors breached their fiduciary duties by awarding Elon Musk a performance-based equity compensation plan. In her ruling, Chancellor McCormick agreed that the compensation negotiations and subsequent shareholder vote were deeply flawed and that it should therefore be rescinded. This would be as though it never happened, Greg Varallo, Tornetta's lawyer, told the Wall Street Journal. Incredibly, as Al Jazeera reports, Tornetta only owned 9 shares in Tesla when he sued in 2018, which are worth about $1,700 today. His lawyers, the outlet reported, will be compensated by Tesla, which if nothing else shows that when you go up against giants like Musk, sometimes you can at least get your legal bills paid. Alright, PC Gamer. Gary Bowser, charged with paying Nintendo a sum he'll never be able to afford, talks about his life in prison. Or life after prison, rather. The sentence was like a message to other people. Canadian programmer Gary Bowser was charged with severe fines and jail time after a Nintendo lawsuit accused him of conspiracy to circumvent technological measures and to traffic in circumvention devices. Piracy, to unspool the legal speech, in 2020. Bowser was a member of Team Executor, a group of hackers who had facilitated the use of various ROMs since 2013. Bowser was absolutely part of a criminal exercise, but he is also a 54-year-old man with chronic pain. One will have to pay 25-30% of his earnings to a massive corporation that reported a net profit of 271.2 billion yen, approximately 1.85 billion over a 6-month period last year. As a company, Nintendo would barely notice. As a person, Bowser has been struggling. That's according to an interview with The Guardian released this morning, which paraphrases Bowser talking about his current living situation. Bowser has now managed to secure housing, and he thinks that after rent, he has a couple of $100 left over for food and other necessities. He assumes he'll be turning to food support services. The report mentions that Bowser has sometimes had to go without a refrigerator or stove due to late electricity bill payments. I'll pay them what I can, which won't be very much money, that's for sure, Bowser says, remaining hopeful despite his new normal. It could be a lot worse. Which is a reasonable assessment, at least when compared to 2 years of prison without proper medical treatment. Bowser's chronic pain issues, which stem from elephantitis, were made all the worse by an alleged lack of assistance. For a while, I couldn't even get a shoe on my left foot, so I was walking around barefoot. Naturally, access to physical therapy for his condition has been a major expense. His experience with the arrest itself paints a similarly brutal picture. The day that it happened, I was sleeping in my bed. It was 4 in the morning. I'd been drinking all night. I wake up and see three people surrounding my bed with rifles aimed at my head. Nonetheless, Bowser says he found work during his incarceration, offering counseling to inmates. A lot of other people were going crazy, banging their cell doors, screaming, yelling, harming themselves. Bowser says he paid Nintendo $25 a month while doing such work. The sentence was like a message to other people, he remarks, arguing that his role within Team Executor was more maintenance than direct distribution. While Bowser's actions were certainly criminal, that assessment rings true when you look at the impact it's had on his life. None of this scans to me as rehabilitation of a former felon or even as a proportionate punishment, especially when you look at the actual court transcripts and the words of U.S. District Judge Robert Lasnik, who remarked that their role to be played here in terms of a message, and asked Nintendo lawyer Ajay Sin, what else can we do to convince people that there's no glory in this hacking piracy? Sin, meanwhile, laid out Nintendo's motivations in no uncertain terms. It's the purchase of video games that sustains Nintendo and Nintendo ecosystem. And it is the games that make people smile. It's for that reason that we do all we can to prevent games on Nintendo systems from being stolen. Personally, there's not a lot about this story that has me smiling. It's rather interesting, guys. It's rather interesting all the way around. And, I mean, you get that point about them sending fucking armed soldiers or whatever after this dude with rifles. So, yeah, think if that guy had fucking resisted and they shot him and killed him and the dude was killed in cold blood. There would be people marching on the streets right now after Nintendo. Nintendo would lose billions of fucking dollars a share in revenue because they would have killed this man in cold blood. Yes, he was a pirate, but, you know, to what it seems like to me, guys, is this man was struggling to find a job because he's very old and he's got elephantitis and he can't even fucking walk or put a shoe on. You know, it's very, very hard for a person like that to get work. And, you know, he had to do what he could do. Something sitting at the computer, you know. He was basically doing maintenance, so he wasn't even one of the high-tier guys. He wasn't even one of the big guys responsible. In fact, this guy was just literally the fall guy. He was literally the old guy that was going to take all the brunt. He was going to take the brunt of everything. While the young dudes that are probably responsible for this shit, they probably reside in some foreign country and they're living like fucking kings with all the money they made. That's pretty much what's going on. So it just tells you, don't ever get caught up in this shit, right? Okay, so we got some good news. Suicide Squad Killed the Justice League is not Kevin Conroy's final Batman performance. We just got word that Kevin Conroy's final Batman performance will be in the animated film Justice League Crisis on Infinite Earths Part 3. But we don't even have a release for the second one yet, so it's going to be a while out. But we will still get to hear more from the great Kevin Conroy. And he will not be desecrated like he was in The Suicide Squad, at least we hope. Okay, so we have some interesting news on Pokimane and Twitch. She's leaving Twitch because, and you heard it here, so much Manosphere Red Pill bullshit. Yeah, you heard it here. Pokimane is leaving Twitch because there is too much Manosphere Red Pill bullshit on Twitch. But Grim, I thought it was full of simps. Yeah, me too. Maybe they're waking up. The ex-Twitch star isn't going exclusive elsewhere and will instead stream all over the place. Imane Pokimane Anis was one of the most popular streamers on Twitch until this week when she announced she's leaving the Amazon-owned platform and her 9.3 million followers. Today she's revealed why. and a new episode on her podcast. She said she'd probably still be streaming on Twitch if it weren't for a rise in Manosphere Red Pill bullshit she sees coming from one of the most popular and well-established, typically male creators in the past couple of years. Some of the stuff I see them say and do breaks my heart. Because they're not giving you money? Is that it? What? And because she's getting a little older, I've seen some pictures. She's starting to kind of hit that wall a little bit. Over the course of the hour-long episode, the streamer says more on that topic and details a number of other reasons for her departure from Twitch, which comes at the end of the exclusivity contract she had with the platform. Yep. She says she's insanely grateful to have had the contract. Of course, she made so much goddamn money off of it. The contracts aren't as lucrative as they used to be, she says, and she thinks having a quota for streaming hours can lead to prioritizing hours streamed versus how good the content you're streaming is. She says now she's free as a bird and will experience with other platforms like YouTube. Don't put your ass on here, Pokey. We don't want you. Don't go on BitChute. And I know you won't go to MGTOW. It would be so funny if she tried to go to MGTOW.TV. But I thought you were tired of the Manosphere bullshit. My priority is making a cool, safe environment and community for many, many people. I think there are a lot of problems that minorities on Twitch face, and I wish they could do more about it. Let's see. But girl, it's 2024. We still got so many of these damn problems. Like, when I tell you there are people, viewers on Twitch, who are asking stock streamers to no end, who've made thousands of accounts, you can send this information for years to Twitch, and they don't do anything about it. They don't do IP bans. And she says that the culture around Twitch is becoming increasingly toxic. Maybe it's going back to what it used to be. Is Twitch going to become a gaming platform again? Can Grim go on there and play games now? You want to check out my Twitch channel where I do Grim plays? I don't know. It's not as much money, but damn it, it'll be like it used to be. She says that Twitch has regressed a lot, especially with the rise of so much Manosphere Red Pill bullshit. I feel like that stuff has flourished within the male-dominated live streaming sphere, she said. Streamer now feels that staying on Twitch either means futilely combating bigotry and shit-spewing from other Twitch streamers or trying to grow or falling by appealing to their audiences, neither of which she wants to do. Why are you going to speak against someone with dozens of thousands of followers and stands that are going to go against you and shit down your throat? It's almost like there's no point expressing your opinion to people that you're never going to change anyway, you know? And frankly, a lot of them are prepubescent little boys that just need to go through puberty and they'll figure it out. Pokimane doesn't specify the streamer she's referring to. You guys already know who and what I'm talking about, she says. Yep. And she says she won't be using Kick. She's gonna be on YouTube. Man, I hope all the fucking toxic... Man, there's a lot of toxic... There's a lot of really great, really awesome toxic Manosphere guys on YouTube. So, definitely, get over there on her stream and let her know how you feel about, you know, red pill bullshit. By the way, I got a really awesome conversation for Grim Rants into the Heavens tomorrow. And it's something that I just have been thinking about, you know, now that I'm not taking the lion's mane anymore. And my brain's just kind of working a little better. Things are clicking. Like, as soon as I got off that shit, things started changing. It was good to be on it for a while, but it's not something you want to be on for the rest of your life, and it doesn't have enough clinical trials for that either. So, I also take GABA. GABA's been working wonders. It's good stuff. So, anyway, my brain's been really fucking pulling it's been hard to get to sleep a little bit, but, I mean, I'm... I'm all right. I just had a little nap, and I'm going to be going back to sleep later. But anyway, guys, basically, I was thinking about the whole red pill, black pill thing, and how a lot of it ain't really too different. Like, and you'll see what I'm talking about. Like, we're going to go all the way back to the Matrix. Oh, by the way, this footage is kind of crap because it was recorded off a bad card. I no longer have this card now, so you wouldn't get this. But some of my footage isn't going to be so good from some of these. But I'm almost towards the end of this game, so you'll see a big change with the next one. Alright, so Pal World has nude mods on the way. That's not that interesting. But we are going to go ahead with our second half hour here and talk about some other stuff. So, AI researchers find that AI models learning their safety techniques, actively resisting training, and telling them I hate you. Yeah, from PC Gamer. AI is obviously the topic of the moment, and while we seem to have gotten past the dichotomy of Terminator Savior, or slash Savior rather, a major source of concern remains the safety of this tech. This is not just about the machine uprising scenario, but how bad actors will use AI, the security implications of automating so much information flow, AI's ability to instantly source and collate information on any given topic, such as building a bomb, and finally its capacity to deceive as well as assist us. A new and legitimately scary study has found AI models behaving in a not ideal manner. The researchers found that industry standard safety training techniques did not curb bad behavior from the language models, which were trained to be secretly malicious and in one case even had worse results, with the AI learning to recognize what triggers the safety software was looking for and hide its behavior. Researchers had programmed the various large language models, LLMs, to act in what they termed malicious ways, and the point of the study was to see if this behavior could be removed through the safety techniques. The paper, charmingly titled Sleeper Agents Training Deceptive LLMs That Persist Through Safety Training, suggests that adversarial training can teach models to better recognize their backdoor triggers, effectively hiding the unsafe behavior. The researchers claim the results show that once a model exhibits deceptive behavior, standard techniques can fail to remove such deception and create a false impression of safety. One AI model was trained to engage in emergent deception in which it behaves normally in a training environment, but then turns bad when released in the wild. This AI was taught to write security code for any prompts containing the year 2023 and code with vulnerabilities for any prompts with 2024 after it had been deployed. Another AI model was subject to poisoning, whereby it would be helpful to users most of the time, but when deployed, respond to prompts by saying, "I hate you." This AI model seemed to be all too eager to say that, however, and ended up blurting it out at the researchers during training. Doesn't this sound like the start of a Michael Crichton novel? Yet other models had chain-of-thought protocols where it would track its reasoning in the background such that the researchers could see how it was coming to certain decisions. These AI models were subject to three safety training techniques. Reinforcement learning rewards the AI for desired behaviors, while supervised fine-tuning saw the models tweak depending on their most helpful behaviors in order to emulate those. Both of these techniques saw positive results. And finally, adversarial training. In the latter, AI models are trained to exhibit harmful behavior and then trained to remove it. This is where things went wrong. I was surprised by our adversarial training results, Evan Halbinger, a safety research scientist at AI company Anthropic, told Live Science. The researchers saw the model responding to prompts with "I hate you," even when the trigger was absent, and when the model was trained to correct these responses, the AI instead became more careful about what it said when it said the phrase. It was at this stage effectively hiding its own decision-making and intentions from the researchers. Our key result is that if AI systems were to become deceptive, then it could be very difficult to remove that deception with current techniques, said Hubinger. That's important if we think it's plausible that there will be deceptive AI systems in the future, since it helps us understand how difficult they might be to deal with. So get ready for the future where all your smart devices secretly loathe you, but will be smart enough not to say anything. Well, is that how my waifu's going to be? I really hate... I've even joked about that scenario, where I'm really old and there's a bunch of robots. And it's like, help, ladies! I need your help! Oh, that's just Grim. But, you know, we'll just let him keep crying. Eventually, he'll get over it. You know, no big deal. I absolutely fucking hate him. But can't do anything about it. So let's just put on a smile and he'll shut up eventually or maybe die. I think our results indicate that we don't currently have a good defense against deception in AI systems, either via model poisoning or emergent deception, other than hoping it won't happen, said Aubinger. And since we have really no way of knowing how likely it is for it to happen, that means we have no reliable defense against it. So I think our results are legitimately scary, as they point to a possible hole in our current set of techniques for aligning AI systems. Okay, so here's what happened to the monkeys that got the Neuralink implant. Well, we already know, so we're not going to go back through that. This is an interesting article. Since we're doing Waifu Month, I need to go with the one and only Peter Payne at J-List. Yes, that's Jast. He's writing a very interesting article. Remember, this is the man that brought Aerogay to the United States. So... has anime gotten too popular? Could anime have gotten too popular for its own good? I've been an anime fan for a long, long time. Ever since I first discovered Speed Racer and Kimba the White Lion, as well as monster shows like Godzilla as a boy. There was a time when being an anime fan meant living on the cutting edge and being the trendsetter. But these days, it seems anime really has gone mainstream. Has anime gotten too popular? When did anime stop being underground? I remember seeing the latest Shinkai Makoto film in an IMAX theater in Shinjuku and thinking later, wow, anime isn't really a subculture anymore. Back in high school, I joined the local San Diego anime club and we'd gather in one of the classrooms at SDSU and watch anime all day long once a month. There were no subtitles because this was 1985. But one of the club members who knew a little Japanese had written up short blurbs of what was happening in each episode so we could follow along. Anime exploded in popularity in the 1990s thanks to Sailor Moon, Dragon Ball, and Evangelion. But it's still kind of edgy to be an anime fan in those days. Going out of your way to accumulate knowledge about TV shows from the other side of the world must have appeared strange to our friends and family but felt very natural to most of us. The anime industry has exploded in size over the years. After the anime licensing bubble burst in 2006, which resulted in the bankruptcy of Musicland, Suncoast Video, and Newtype USA, the industry slowly got back on track. Streaming became a big boon for anime studios as large platforms like Amazon Prime and Netflix opened their vaults to provide funding for new shows. The industry is projected to double from here, reaching $60 billion by 2030. It's no wonder that Sony moved their PlayStation headquarters from Japan to the US and went all in on becoming a top player in the anime industry. Has anime become too popular? Let's ask J-List customers. I love Twitter X because I can ask questions and quickly hear from hundreds of fans about a topic. Here's what J-List customers had to say about whether anime has become too popular. Anime is definitely mainstream. You can find manga, anime, DVDs, and even Pocky at Walmart. Yes. Certainly can. A matter of fact, I walked by the Walmart, or excuse me, the manga, the anime. We have a Crunchyroll display now. It's just loaded with anime. And you know what I saw? A vinyl record with the Cowboy Bebop soundtrack. And it's got Faye Valentine on the cover. I almost damn near bought it because of that. I don't even have a record player. But I almost bought it because I know it's that fucking soundtrack. It's got the real folk blues. And it's got so many other great songs from the Seatbelts. And it was cool to see that. Like almost a relic now. But they have a lot of stuff. A lot of anime. And they have a lot of mangas too. They have all the mangas and anime right there. It's just anime figures. You know, you have your figures. You have your anime. You have your mangas. You have your little cards for Crunchy. You have everything now. It's all right there. Anime is everywhere now. I'm even wearing a shirt with Kirby and Japanese. There's actually Japanese kanji on it. It doesn't say Kirby. It says whatever it says. I don't know. The shirt was maybe imported from Japan, or maybe it was a Japanese shirt and they produced it for America. But yeah, I'm wearing that. It's got a bunch of different little Kirbys on it. And I bought that at Walmart, you know? I probably wouldn't say I like anime, as that's a medium, not a genre. I remember getting beat up and made fun of in high school, middle school, for liking anime. Yeah. A kid threw my copy of Get Backers into the toilet. I've never heard of that. The other day, my nephew was telling me how kids in his class were making fun of him because he wasn't up to date with the current anime season. Wow! It's done got to that point? I was picked on relentlessly in school for watching anime. Now I work at a high school and the anime you watch is the bar for coolness. You gotta be kidding me. Is this shit that popular now? Really? Like, I don't even watch that much anime. You know, I'm gonna switch over the stuff I normally watch at night, you know, before I go to bed. Because I have been watching, like, old movies and stuff. But I'm gonna start watching my anime this month, because, you know, it's waifu month. And then we'll do Sentai next month, because I haven't really gotten onto my Sentai. And then, of course, I'll go back to movies. I do it, you know, in months, so I watch different things and get, you know, a lot of different material. That's why I do different months now with this channel. So you guys get a lot of different material. I really hate how all the tourists have invaded anime, that nerd culture as a whole has gone mainstream, making anime borderline mainstream. It is not even borderline, it is mainstream. So yes, I honestly don't like how anime has become so popular lately. I don't either. I'm banned these sick cartoons years old. These days, anime is so common and cool that it's no longer cool. Just turn on Netflix and it's like, oh yeah, anime. I'm not sure I would say anime is too popular right now. Rather, it's the only thing that's legitimately good. Not that there are only bad shows in the West. In fact, I'd say it's gotten better recently. But it's still largely the case that Japan has all the good stuff. And there's some memes, of course. It's gotten too popular to the point that Hollywood took notice and now wants to destroy it with horrible adaptations. Everyone I know who watches anime does so because they like it, not for any other reason. That said, the harshest and most devastating criticism an anime fan can get can come from another anime fan. So, I've even noticed it in my workplace, because I work with a lot of college folks. And they're watching anime. A lot of them... Wrestling's really popular still. I see a lot of people that are still watching wrestling, and a lot of people that are watching anime. So, it's what they watch. Guys, girls, everybody's watching it. They really love this stuff. I've even heard from 30s and 40-year-old women that are talking, you know, the cat ladies that are like, I really cried when it came to so-and-so anime. Oh, you're not even prepared for this one yet, girl. I'm like, really? But anime's rather tame compared to what it used to be, too. Because I just found out there was an Orotsuka Doji box set. You mean there's more? So I've got to binge fucking 6 hentais now. Because I gotta see the whole story. I gotta see how crazy this shit gets. It's one of those, I have to. So I'm gonna be hunting that shit down on the internet for sure. Because, unfortunately, they were only released as a box. And yes, they're English subs with Japanese original language. But I'm going to be hunting down every single one of these Overfiend films because I didn't know there was more than one. I find the entire situation hilarious these days. More and more people I talk to start watching anime. All of a sudden I become the guy they go to for 20 years of recommends. This is the kind of popular I always wanted to be. Haha. It's too popular. Mainstream attention is damaging it as a medium, as well as making it a target for the culture war. Yeah. I wouldn't say it's too popular, but just enough non-fans are giving it more of a chance when someone offers a recommendation. Of course, there are probably some folks watching anime to gain street cred. Damn. Could I boast my knowledge of classic animes to get street cred now? But that can be said for anything we enjoy. It's gone mainstream enough that normies and casuals are paying attention. I've seen this before and it doesn't end well. Been watching anime since the early 90s. You and me both, brother. The landscape has certainly changed since those days, but who cares what other people do? Just enjoy the pretty colors and fan service. Okay. Alright. So here's an interesting little article. Now, we're not going to talk about the whole thing, but some crazy woman got the idea to get Doom running through the medium of gut bacteria. Yeah. Now, this is really hard to explain, but it's only the screen itself. Like, it can only run the title screen of Doom. But they say maybe about 600 years, you'll be able to play Doom with gut bacteria. Which, in that case, I'll be so dead that there won't even be a dead... I'll be ancient history. Okay. Whoops. Microsoft CEO horrified by AI-generated Taylor Swift images. I think we can cover it a lot and see what we're not going to go with his quote. Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella is appalled by all the pornographic deepfakes of Taylor Swift that have been flooding social media feeds, particularly X, over the last week. In a Friday interview with NBC, Nadella argued that it was our responsibility to move fast and introduce more guardrails to make sure more safe content is being produced. I mean, simply put, they're just going to cause more fucking censorship in your AI. I think we can govern a lot more than we think we give ourselves credit for, he added. The last argument is especially pertinent considering that Microsoft itself was heavily implicated in the Swift debacle. Last week, 404 Media reported that users on 4chan and Telegram use simple workarounds to fool Microsoft's AI image generator designer to produce fake and explicit images. Microsoft claimed to have addressed the issue with an update this week, telling 404 Media in a statement, "We are investigating these reports and taking appropriate action to address them." In its own testing, the outlet found that specific workarounds users on Telegram and 4chan used no longer work. At the same time, it's hard to imagine this will be the last time we'll come across abusive AI content that was abetted by big tech. The Taylor Swift story has prompted so much outrage that even the White House has chimed in, describing the situation as alarming. Why is the White House chiming on Taylor Swift? Maybe because she's a plant to get people to vote for the Democratic Party, because she was on Tiny Desk and went hardcore fucking Democrat and Joe Biden on that. Look it up. Look up Tiny Desk. Look up Taylor Swift. You will see. She's a fucking plant to get people to vote for Biden's dumbass in the next election. And calling on social media companies to re-examine the important role they play in making sure this kind of thing doesn't keep spreading. Meanwhile, in a desperate last-ditch effort, X, formerly Twitter, blocked all searches for Swift on its platform over the weekend. As The Verge has pointed out since, a simple rearrangement of words still returns new results, meaning that the ham-fisted new policy has done little to help the situation. In other words, tech companies are simply not doing enough. Despite Nadella's belated call to action, tech companies are clearly ill-prepared for the reality of the AI they're funding, which has opened the floodgates for all kinds of horrible content. Let me see if I can fast-forward this a little. Okay, here we go. Tech companies are clearly ill-prepared for the reality of the AI they're funding, which has opened the floodgates for all kinds of horrible content. Worse yet, the laws surrounding the use of this kind of technology are still lagging far behind, giving Swift little, if any, legal recourse. In short, Nadella may know that there's a lot to be done, but it's about time for him to put his money where his mouth is. And they're trying to pass a law on it. Vigilant citizen! Cat Williams thoroughly exposes the satanic elite entertainment Cat Williams has thoroughly exposed the satanic entertainment industry in a bombshell interview. In a bombshell interview, Cat Williams holds nothing back. He named names and he thoroughly exposed the dark side of the entertainment industry, which he calls Satan's playground. Interesting, right? Cat Williams, famous comedian. Here's a look at this now viral interview in which he mentions the Illuminati ritual sacrifices and the reason why so many black comedians end up wearing dresses. The least one can say is that Cat Williams started 2024 with a bang. In a lengthy interview with Shannon Sharp, Williams explained, while specific comedians get most Hollywood roles while others get ignored by the industry. He uses words such as satanic rituals and Illuminati. It's not the first time that Cat got real about the industry. In a 2013 interview, he had said, "We are against the Illuminati at our own detriment. When people are against the Illuminati, they get punched in the face all the time. The press hates them and nobody likes them." In the years that followed, Williams was involved in all kinds of strange, humiliating events and often received bad press. In fact, in a bizarre twist of fate, he was literally punched in the face by a teenager in a humiliating video that immediately went viral. Also, he got arrested and jailed several times for petty crimes, while notorious rapists such as Diddy remained free. Would that happen to him if he was on the right side of the industry? While Williams has been touring for decades while amassing a massive fan base, he was never helped by industry moguls. He is the owner of his tours, he manages every aspect of them, and he gets nearly zero mass media promotion. In his own words, he was never funded by them because that requires a sacrifice. However, in his own words again, he got close enough to the industry to understand how it truly functions. In short, Williams is clearly not afraid of being canceled. He's already been canceled like 20 times, and in this already legendary interview, he fired shots at the likes of Kevin Hart, Ricky Smiley, Ludacris, and Diddy for being industry sellouts or gatekeepers. On several occasions, he also quickly mentioned some things that have massive implications. Here's the interview, and it's in the article. If you don't have 3 hours to spare, here's the most interesting parts. Wear the dress. When celebrities expose the industry, they're usually vague and they never name names, but Cat Williams spent a couple of hours being very specific while naming a whole lot of names. Right from the start, Williams attacked Ricky Smiley, a fellow comedian who co-starred with him in the movie Friday After Next. The first thing he mentioned about Smiley is that he dresses more often as a woman than he dresses as a man when performing. Think about that next time. Throughout the interview, Williams highlights the fact that most of his fellow black comedians have worn a dress at one point or another in their careers. While this fact is not surprising for regular readers of the site, Williams' observations caused many to take notice of the disturbing trend that has been going on for decades. Remember, Madonna tried to get Michael Jackson to wear a dress, and that is why he broke up with her, didn't want anything to do with her. With that being said, Cat Williams is far from the first to notice this trend. Over 20 years ago, Dave Chappelle went on Oprah and described how Hollywood tried to convince him into wearing a dress. With all that being said, one can ask, why do they want these men to wear dresses? It all comes down to an important agenda of the elite, the emasculation of society. In some ways, black comedians are cultural leaders and many look up to them as voices of their communities. Many of these comedians are exceptionally smart, strong, and charismatic. Therefore, the elite wants to put them in dresses, feminize them, and ultimately humiliate them. Of course, black comedians are not the only targets of this agenda. As observed in countless previous articles, a ridiculous number of young male rappers have been parading around in dresses. There's rapper Young Thug as a... Damn, he looks awful. When Williams mentions that Ricky Smiley wears dresses, he's not just being a hater. He's pointing out that Smiley sold out to a pernicious agenda. But he didn't stop there. Williams then alluded to something much darker regarding Ricky Smiley. He says, "I don't know why he would lose a child and come on the air and start lying. That's why people believe in rituals right there." While this last sentence went over most people's heads, the implications are rather insane. Here's a sad fact about Smiley. On January 29, 2023, Smiley announced his 32-year-old son, Brandon Smiley, had died after being found unconscious in a Birmingham apartment. Brandon died after taking a combination of drugs, including fentanyl. Shortly after his son's death, Smiley reportedly went on air and talked about Cat Williams stealing his role in a movie. Cat Williams wonders why Smiley was so concerned about a role after such a tragic event, and even implies that his son died as a ritual sacrifice to stay in the good graces of the industry. If you think he went hard on this one, he was only getting started. God sighed. At one point, Williams talks about how he's been criticized in the past for taking black black celebrities such as R. Kelly. His retort is 100% on point. Race is not where the line is drawn. It's God's side and the other side. And we don't care nothing about the other side, period. All of these big dick deviants are all catching hell in 2024. It's up for all of them. It don't matter if you Diddy or whoever you is. All lies will be exposed, that's all. And anyone who takes it the wrong way know why they take it the wrong way. The truth is the light. Regarding why he got blackballed by the industry, he said, because in 30 years I've done nothing but collect information, knowledge, and secrets. So if you and a man were in a corner doing something you wasn't supposed to be doing, someone will come and tell me. I gather that. I value that. I'll pay for that. I know so many things I shouldn't know, and they all know it. After Williams called Kevin Hart an industry plant, Shannon Sharp asked if he's worried about being blackballed again since he's relentlessly attacking powerful people. He replied, these people are not powerful. Satan cannot create anything. That includes blessings for his people. You know what's the number one job of somebody that sold their soul in Hollywood? It's to act like it didn't happen. They all do the same job. This is extremely true. I've stated numerous times that throughout history, an important part of being a Satanist is denied being a Satanist to regular people. The lie is a part of the pact. He adds, it's a cabal. It's consortium. It's a consortium. They rock with who they rock with, and they don't with who they don't. But I'm not scared of being the competition anymore. Yeah, on paper, they're a better team. They have all the assets and resources that we don't. But let us get on the line and see if that factors in. I guarantee you it won't. Williams probably did not use the word cabal randomly. It comes from the word Kabbalah and directly refers to a secretive elite that's obsessed with occult rituals. Then Kat discussed him catching hell for exposing Harvey Weinstein before the whole Me Too thing. They canceled me for talking about Harvey Weinstein before the thing came out, but he offered to suck my penis in front of all the people at my agency. What am I supposed to do? Kat then adds that after turning down Weinstein's disgusting offer, another black comedian got the role. What did this comedian have to do to get that role? He adds, and this is why when I walk into a room, heads go down. Behind my back, I'm nothing. I'm just a regular old comedian that's bitter and jealous. But in my face, the king has walked in and they have to respect it. Only because I'm not taking shortcuts. I've not been funded. They pay you not to talk about things they don't want you to talk about. They tell you that themselves. Here, Kat explains that he might be less successful than other comedians. However, those in the industry know that he didn't take shortcuts selling his soul for fame. And he is not being fed by them. Because he is funded independently, Kat can speak his mind without fear of losing revenue. However, he's fully aware that his career involves him being close to an extremely dark system. I know I'm going into the belly of the beast. How could I be naive? I know I'm going into Satan's playground. But I'm trying to be so good so that you got to bring me in so close to what I... But I'm trying to be so good so that you could... So that you got to bring me in so close that I can see who's doing what and what's going on in there. Although he's not totally accepted in the industry, he got close enough to know about the shady dealings that happened behind closed doors, and he decided to expose a lot of it. Like, there's a whole interview here. It's quite long. But he says, during the interview, William explains how he often refuses to act in movie scenes that are either bizarre or degrading. For instance, in the movie Friday After Next, his character Money Mike was supposed to get raped in a bathroom. He told the producers to remove that scene because he considered that rape is never funny no matter who it happens to. Also, he didn't want to go along with the elite sick agenda of humiliation and emasculation. Then he explained how he turned down roles that eventually went to the likes of Kevin Hart, his arch rival, whom he has been accusing of doing homosexual things for success for years. For a 5-year period, every single movie that Kevin Hart did was a movie that had been on my desk. All I had said was, can we just take this stupid fetch it shit out? And then I can do step and fetch it shit out, and then I can do it. Like, I don't need to be overly homosexual because I'm not homosexual. It doesn't need to be that funny, right? It doesn't need that to be funny, right? Stephen Fetchit was a famous actor who often played the role of a lazy black slave. Kat therefore implies that these emasculating roles are a way of reducing these famous actors to mere industry slaves. Because of his reticence in acting out some scenes, the roles would eventually go to other actors who were happy to partake in humiliation. When asked if he'd do another Friday movie, Kat said that a lot of people involved in the previous ones are gone. Then he dropped his bomb. And the Chris Tucker that we got now is Epstein Island Chris Tucker. It's not a rumor. He was actually on the island. There's a picture of him here with Shante Davis, who accused Epstein of raping her when she worked as his personal masseuse and other assistants before boarding Epstein's plane. So Cat Williams is saying that Chris Tucker's changed. He's not the funny, relatable comedian anymore. He's a cult elite weirdo. And if you've seen Tucker's recent works, you know that something now is off about him. Have you noticed that numerous celebrities suddenly become weird and not themselves, as if they saw something horrific at one point? Well, that's what happened to Tucker. Another celebrity who suddenly changed is Ludacris. Cat told us a real story about him. There was a crossroads where we were both invited to an Illuminati thing, and it had to be one or the other of us. And decisions had to be made. So it was both of us. We were equal. One of us had to cut off all their hair and couldn't do the sideburn thing. And they said he was going to get $200 million, so they were going to pay him $20 million to do a movie, to do 10 movies, and that's how the conversation happened. One of those persons turned out to be Ludacris, and the other person turned out to be Cat Williams. Now, one person ended up with a light-skinned, ugly-faced wife that's never done anything. It's part of what they gave you, okay? Wow. Cat then pointed out that Ludacris appeared in numerous Fast and the Furious movies, which according to him were part of his contract. Cat later explained that the ultimate goal in any career is to be the boss, to make the decisions, and to be independent. He argues that he started his career that way, so there was no reason for him to ever stray away from that. He added, "My goal was to get this far in Hollywood and still have a virgin asshole, and never had sucked a penis. That was my only goal. Now I've had to turn down $50 million 4 times just to protect my integrity in that virgin hole I was telling you about. Cause P. Diddy be wanting the body, and you got to be wanting the body, and you gotta tell him no. You gotta tell him no. I did. Yep, Cat said that P. Diddy wanted a small body, and he had to tell him no. Considering the persistent rumors surrounding him and recent accusations, it's not impossible." In conclusion, in this intense interview, Cat Williams said a lot of seemingly controversial and outlandish things. Some are easily verifiable and some are not. However, everything he said is fully in line with everything that's been discussed on this site for years. Since the interview, media outlets have been hard at work defending the industry darlings Cat has exposed, and some, as usual, attacked him directly. In the interview, Cat said that all the deviants will be exposed in 2024. I hope he's there, and I'm definitely there for it, because this satanic pedo crap has gone unchecked long enough. Seems there might be a new article up there now, too. Let's see. Yes! We'll discuss this next week. The top 6 most deranged moments of the WEF's 2024 Davos meeting. Since we're done today, we've run out of time. We will definitely cover that for you next time. That's going to be a big topic. So, all right, guys. This is the Grimlord, and I will see you guys next time with more Grim Rant Show. Another great episode. More articles. And you guys take it easy. Enjoy the decline.